everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. Tom, we made it to Friday, July 25th, 2025.
Are we there yet?
Not a cloud in the sky. And this has been the strangest summer thunderstorm season, a.k.a. monsoon. I'm not really complaining because after getting hammered two straight summers with like being in the midst of some kind of tornado.
And then that begs the question, is having a strange summer becoming the norm?
Could be.
There's an oxymoron for you.
I don't know. But folks know I'm kind of a weather hobbyist. So I like the gentle rains. I would just like more of them. All right. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. No, we're not out at Green Things. I wouldn't mind being out there. It's such a beautiful place. But they do have the naming rights when we're on the air here, noon to one during the week. They've got the naming rights to our studio where we do the show. And we do the show from Central Tucson, part of the Bustos Media Center. Pretty proud of our five radio stations all performing very well in this market. Of course, we're the news talk station, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk, 14 and a half years with the radio show for nearly four decades in Tucson media and a lot more before that. Worldwide live listening of our podcasts, all available at buckmastershow.com. The telephone live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners, a couple of them of note, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, and the online news service Tucson Spotlight. Jim Ninsel is my media co-host. Jim was so overwhelmed with stuff going on with TucsonSentinel.com, he just could not come down to the station, so we asked him to call in. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Doing fine, Bill. Just trying to make all those deadlines. Got that city council race. Got an election coming up in a week and a half.
Yeah, we got the election coming up, and everybody's talking about Project Blue. But anyway, Jim, thanks for participating. Laura Conover is with us. We are always delighted to bring Laura in. We try to get her on the schedule, and I'll be, after today's interview, trying to book her for October. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a quarterly deal, and it's worked out well. Laura is Pima County's top legal officer, got in late last night back on the East Coast. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm happy to be home, and I'm always happy to be here with you, Bill, and with your listeners. I got back from Philly last night where I was with a legal think tank. They are the legal think tank that supported us with litigation during our reproductive health case when we needed to go against the attorney general, the former attorney general for the entire state. And they've been helping us now on our national litigation on the civil side on behalf of our client departments who reported that their invoices just stopped getting paid by the federal government. And so we, you know, as their attorneys, housing, transportation, the health department, we needed to take that into court. And a local DA's office like ours doesn't have a huge affirmative litigation department. So it's incredible to have nationwide partners.
It's a lot of money at stake, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a fortune, especially in taxpayer money, millions and millions of dollars that, it would blow a hole in our local budget. So
and the feds just said they're not paying anymore?
They just stopped paying. They just stopped paying. Now, thanks to our litigation and our preliminary injunctions that we've received, that the funding turned back on. It's huge. Mm. But we got to stay in the fight for the long term. That keeps going.
Jim Ninsel, I've got a stack of stuff. What's at the top of your stack of stuff for Laura?
Laura, there's a murder case here in Tucson. A man named Paul Clifford was killed right near Christmas last year. The suspects in the case have been arrested. They came evidently to his door, lured him out to say they were needed help with car trouble, and then he was found murdered after that. The widow in this case, Christina Clifford, is very upset to hear that there is a plea bargain in the works for two of these three suspects in this case. One of them receiving probation, one of them potentially receiving probation, one of them potentially receiving a year in prison. I'm wondering if you can discuss at all the circumstances of these plea bargains and what you would say to the widow in this case.
Yeah, this was the case, Laura Conover. I'll just inject in here for people that maybe haven't been following it. Christina Clifford, the widow of the slain Good Samaritan, Paul Clifford, way out on the far east side. Mr. Clifford, someone knocked at the door Christmas, or 2 days before Christmas, purportedly needing help with the car, and things went bad from there. Go ahead, Laura Conover.
So the first thing I need to say really quickly and briefly is that the rules and ethics and procedures that bind me in the law prevent me from talking about specific facts and circumstances of a pending case, and that's what we have here. The second thing I want to say is that my heart is full of compassion and sorrow, and that's something that I had an opportunity to say to the widow and her daughter directly when we sat down for a long time. I made a vow coming into office that if anyone had lost someone, lost a family member in a crime-related incident, I would sit down personally if they so wished to do that. And because of the homicide spike that had occurred before I came in, I've had well over 100 of those meetings, and They're heartbreaking meetings. They are an opportunity for me to sit and listen humbly to what people have been through. It's an opportunity for me to see the victim advocate in their extraordinary skills in helping victims navigate through a system that they never wanted to be a part of. And I'll focus on that families, generally speaking, families find themselves in horrifying trauma and grief. It happens suddenly. There's no preparation or planning for it. There's no training manual for how the legal system works, and that's why our victim advocates are so important. And that's what I was doing in private practice right before I ran for office. I was a legal victim representative. I was sort of the third attorney in the room. What I can point to is what is already in the public record. I'm limited, and that's frustrating. And like all cases, I'll answer all the questions when it's done, and I try to be transparent with that. But what I can say that's in the public record is that this is one of those cases. We do it rarely, infrequently. We do it with great caution, where the homicide panel has decided, and I have authorized, that there will be no plea agreement at all against the alleged shooter, that there will be no opportunity to take accountability, because we are going to go to trial and attempt to secure a conviction on first-degree premeditated murder. And that means a natural life sentence, meaning that the person will go, if successful, a person would go to prison for life and would die there without any other recourse. So, of course, we're very careful about that. In any case where you have multiple co-defendants, each person is assessed for what they are actually responsible for. And so you have three very different outcomes. You know, they're focused on, I think, the least of which that could happen, but a judge decides what happens to the other two at the end of the case. But you can only prosecute people for what they're actually responsible for, and that's called doing the right thing. And it causes confusion, you know. This is why we have the meetings. You know, we spend hours explaining, but that doesn't help. You've lost a loved one. You know, I mean, I hope it helps. We're told that it helps some families, and some families are going to be in that spot of grief where it's never going to make sense to them, and that's okay, and we accept that. It doesn't make sense. I wish I had that magic wand and could go back to December 28. But the system works with the tools that it has, and we're going to continue to stay completely focused on a first-degree premeditated upcoming murder trial.
Jim, any follow-up on that, or can I move to another issue?
Just to follow up, I guess I would ask Laura to talk about her opposition to the death penalty.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm always looking for an opportunity to educate on that, and I made a difficult but very thoughtful decision when I filed for office to be, again, completely transparent. And I had already been on the record for years that that after decades of study nationwide and here in Arizona, including recent statewide studies, the death penalty, unfortunately, is a very failed, very expensive, inherently racist, no matter how hard we try, inherently racist with inequitable outcomes, a system that our community cannot afford and should not tinker with. And I put it on the ballot, meaning I brought it up every single day in the first campaign and in the second campaign so that people would know that the truth, that it would be transparent and honest, that we would hold the line. And this makes sense for so many reasons, most especially due to the brand new three-part series that just came out on ABC 15 that covers all of Maricopa County that shows the fortune being spent, and you're only getting the death penalty like a third or less than a third of the time. And to carve out precious resources on something that's not even literally working is just not something I can do as a responsible administrator. And so especially when we know, which I just said, that we have a different kind of death penalty here in Arizona, which is called life without parole. And you go to prison and it's on God's terms and you die there after serving hard time to be held accountable for the harm, the ultimate harm that you've caused. And that's where we're at 4.5 years in.
All right, let's take a pause right here. Laura Conover is here, Pima County Attorney. Segment number one in the books. We've got segment number two with Laura Conover coming up. It's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon. We will be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. A lot on our plates today as we talk to Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. Jim Nintzel is with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Project Blue seems to be the story has really dominated the news here in town, this economic development story. And our friend Mark Evans, who's the Pima County spokesman, told the Arizona Daily Star today that Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher, Jan may have violated that non-disclosure agreement with Project Blue by accidentally giving a 2023 memo to Luminaria, a Tucson news site, naming a division of Amazon as the operator. And that, of course, wasn't supposed to come out as part of the NDA. I guess this has now been turned over to you as the chief legal officer for the county. You and your staff will take a look at this. I guess there would be risk of some financial penalties.
So, you know, Bill, this is a good reminder that, you know, most people still just know me, the important function as the prosecutor for Pima County. But equally and critically important, we're the legal advisor to all the county departments. We run the whole civil department. We're the legal advisor to the Board of Supervisors and to the county administrator herself. I think what we've seen play out is just a reminder that we're all human, and I think that the situation so far is being treated that way, that we're all human, and an immediate recognition of the error and work to remedy. And so I'm seeing people collaborate and handling it that way. It's our only role our only role in this situation is not policy. We're just the attorneys helping with contractual language, et cetera. The bigger decision and the big community concern about the land and the water, it gets played out at the policy level with the Board of Supervisors and with mayor and council. So we're all going to wait to see what they inevitably decide to do.
Jim Nintzel, join our conversation. Go ahead.
You had a lot of concerns that you expressed about a situation where the federal government came in and took a suspect in another crime rampage and homicide. I think it was homicide out of your custody or out of TPD's custody or Pima County's custody and took him into federal custody. Can you talk a little bit about your concerns in that case?
Absolutely. And I thank you for the question, Jim, because the community should be alarmed and educated and aware. This is one of those rare situations, Jim, where I'm not talking about the facts and circumstances of the case. I'm talking about some bizarre and unprecedented procedural maneuvers, right? So I'm not talking about the heart of the matter, but the procedural maneuvers going on. And, you know, and I think that community pushback, you know, this is not how we operate down here in Southern Arizona. And to the extent that decisions are, as we've been told, are clearly being driven by Phoenix, but not by Phoenix so much as even D.C., to the extent that we're getting that, we need everyone to know that Southern Arizona doesn't operate this way. We follow the rule of law, and it's important to remember that. And so when a person accused of, again, first degree murder and then a number of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charges,
holding seven people
right
at gunpoint after he broke into homes while he was trying to steal a car, he allegedly shot and killed Ricky E. Miller Sr.
So, Bill, thank you. So you're talking about eight Pima County victims, okay? Plus another huge number of witnesses and Good Samaritans. Once again, you know, I have to say it's a Midtown neighborhood in a small little apartment complex full of good people who risked their lives to save each other, and many lives were saved. And our normal job, and I hate to say normal, but this is what our violent crime unit is for. This is what the service we provide. We were supposed to wait for him to get medically cleared, the accused. He was injured. And then he was supposed to go to the Pima County Jail so that we could prosecute on behalf of all eight victims. Mm-hmm. And instead, he was taken in the middle of the night and taken out of county to a private federal detention center on a charge of carjacking and possession of a gun that does not account for or referent, you know, does not account for and does not bring justice to all eight victims.
This is really an unprecedented area. This suspect, an undocumented migrant, taken in the dead of the night out of Pima County. So what about justice for these people?
Right, precisely. That, you know, I want to point out importantly, Bill, that our chief has always, Tucson Police Chief has always said that in his time as chief, we never had a murder suspect who was not here legally in the country, and this was the first. So you see what, you know, DC and the federal administration are doing. They have the first. They've been victims before, but here's the first person who's been criminally deported before. And they grab him and they put out in their press release that this is part of their Operation Take Back America or whatever. What I have said is, when were we warned that they would snatch people out of our custody and out of our justice system for some purpose of demonstrating that he was criminally deported before and to have a carjacking and to deprive our community of a first-degree murder and to deprive eight victims, six of whom are a four-generation family here, and to deprive them of all justice because of some unprecedented, you know, stunt. I have to call it as I see it. It feels very much like a stunt the way that it's happened, and it should be appalling and an affront to the rule of law. And let me make very clear, I am not standing for it. You know, for 10 days I was negotiating and being diplomatic behind the scenes. Once that was over and they took custody of him, I needed the public to know, and I need the public to know that we're not stopping. We are proceeding as we are meant to do and obligated to by the law. We are proceeding as we speak.
And do we know where this individual, Mr. Aguilar, is?
We heard which facility it was some time ago. If he's moved, then we haven't been alerted. We're not getting alerts when things are filed in federal court, but we're tracking it and following it, and we'll have more to say on this next week.
All right, let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our friend Matt would like to join in our conversation with Laura Conover. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I'll try to be very quick. Laura, you know, the city council did pass an ordinance regarding the homeless in the Washes. Have you seen an increase in volume because of that? Second, TCSC has proposed adopting a law similar to the city of San Jose that would also make it an ordinance to increase if they deny help with services. That you could possibly put them back in jail. Any thoughts on that, too? Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Matt, for your thoughtful questions. The first I'll say is that the City of Tucson ordinance, I've checked in a couple times. We haven't, and we're not really likely to see any kind of outcome on that. And by we, I mean my office, because these are city level misdemeanors, and it's important to remind again: all misdemeanors that occur in the city limits, trespass, criminal damage, misdemeanor assault, all of those go to the Tucson City Court and are handled by the Tucson City Prosecutor. I do think that there has been some uptick by the Tucson Police Department in citing people. I think it's more of a citation issue that's happening for people who are, you know, on the street corners and such like that. As to the second question about involuntary commitment, that is a very complex topic. I do want to say that we have long been blessed, and there are still few communities across the nation to have a secured hospital. It's called the Crisis Response Center, and it is a secured hospital for someone experiencing tremendous illness. And a lot of that is voluntary. People going in and seeking help, which is a beautiful thing. Or when someone is presenting as a danger to self or others, they can be involuntarily committed for the purpose of evaluation to determine, try to determine what's going on and what are the next best steps. We've had that for some time. Expansions to that, and who's motivated by what motivations to expand that, and any talk of sweeping the streets and forgetting that people are ill and that these are people's brothers and sisters, and that they all have a mama that brought them into this world. You know, forgetting that and reducing people to words like zombies, which I hear all the time, and I don't tolerate it. That's what worries me. We have to be, you know, when you talk about involuntary commitment, you sure as heck better be very, very cautious and have lots and lots of safeguards in place so that you are helping and not harming.
And involuntary civil commitment is now very much on the table today. President Trump signing an executive order to combat homelessness, encouraging local governments to revive the civil commitment process to place people with mental health issues in treatment facilities without their consent. This was used extensively in the 1950s.
That's right, Bill. And that came across my desk late last night. And it's a perfect highlight of my gratitude. Two things: my gratitude that we are fortunate enough to have a secured hospital, and my fear, right? Because once you go down that road, you know, what if you're living in a community that does not have a secured hospital? So where are you involuntarily committing people? And who's responsible for them? And who's supervising? And what safeguards and guardrails? You know, that you mentioned the 50s. I mean, that we deliberately moved away from that because of the horrifying things that happened. And that's why I start every conversation with humanizing. We are talking about our brothers and sisters. You know, these are human beings. And anytime we start making them other or making them less than human, I get very nervous very quickly. And so I've tried to take a close look at that executive order. It, in theory, it looks like a lot of the language that's used for help, not for harm, here in our crisis response center. But I know everyone's going to be keeping a very close eye on that.
Let's go back now to Jim Nintzel from TucsonSentinel.com. Jim, go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to ask about the Trump administration and any grants or other funding that's been coming to your office that is in jeopardy or has been cut off. Are you facing anything on that front?
I'll say that my Victim Services Division primarily has been the unit that's been most stressed by cuts. And I would say in particular, that's not an area of the justice system that thought that they were going to get hit. But victim services and victim advocate organizations across the nation have had sweeping cuts for reasons that they don't understand and no one understands. All of my other departments, I think, were pivoting quickly and trying to be very nimble, and we work with an extraordinary grant writer. The bigger concern, as I said, I think at the top of the hour, Jim, it was, you know, flood control, Pima County flood control, transportation, housing, the health department. And so it's been very top of mind, and tons of labor hours of trying to keep their revenue streams going. And luckily we've had a lot of success so far. A federal judge in the state of Washington And then another, I want to say another more relief out of Illinois as well, because of similarly situated departments in other places.
We have talked in our conversations over the years about your staffing situation. Give our listeners an overview. What are your numbers looking like in your office these days?
We have been very blessed, and I'm very, very grateful for so much hard work, paying off. Recruitment has gone very, very well. And we continue to have applicants coming in to wanting to join our ranks, and that it's been fantastic. So we're actually a little bit higher now on the number of prosecutors than when I first walked in the door, which is a huge relief, although that's still much lower than the height of the years ago from the previous administration. So, and that's on me. Now that we've sort of achieved that initial benchmark of success, it's on me to continue to reprioritize my budget and make hard cuts, difficult decisions and hard cuts in other areas in the agency to make sure that we're fully staffed and serving victims and serving the courtrooms.
Jim, did you have some more for us?
I noticed on your website you have a spot where folks can report Social Security disruptions, and I'm wondering if you're hearing about those and what the motivation was to post that on your website for people to easily report that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely, Jim. Thank you for raising that, because we still want people reporting. I think the volume or frequency of the reporting has come down a bit, which is, I'm hoping, a good sign, although we'll see after this kind of publication here whether it ticks back up again. But we had calls coming in and community reports of significant delays, which is just, unacceptable. You can't have that for vulnerable populations and those who've earned a right to live peacefully in their retirement years. It's also a huge cooperation with our Attorney General, Chris Mays. So she's collecting it on a statewide level. And then we collect the Pima County reports, and then we regularly funnel them up to her so that she can keep track at the statewide level. But I know initially we had 20 very serious reports come in that we shared with the Attorney General's office.
And Chris Mays will be our Friday Focus interview 2 weeks from today. We just confirmed that Chris will be, she periodically comes on our program. We appreciate that. I've known Chris for a long time, actually going back to when she was once a reporter.
Right. I figured that, actually.
Yeah, that's the that's the connection, right? There, that goes back a long way when she was reporting up in Phoenix, and I was working at the Associated Press in Phoenix. That seems like a million years ago, Laura Conover. Getting back to the Good Samaritan case that we talked about, and then some are quick who don't agree with you to label you soft on crime. Do you think that a lot of that soft on crime thinking goes back to what we talked about and your stance against the death penalty?
Well, look, if you are a fan of holding people accountable by executing them, and if you believe that that's a necessary tool, or that it works, I'm always willing to engage in that data debate. But again, but not with people who are grieving, And if that's the perception, then they're entitled to their opinion. But the proof is evident in the last 4.5 years that when the timing is right, we have gone to trial. Dervish was the University of Arizona professor case. Clements, obviously, which was Isabel Celis. We have and will, and we have tremendous results, right? I mean, these are expert, dedicated, experienced prosecutors who go to trial and secure lifetime imprisonment convictions. And we hold people accountable who cause harm in our community and who are demonstrating that they are an ongoing threat of harm. If the complaint is that we're dedicating our resources to violent crime and then working to push substance use disorder and mental health responsibly and carefully back into the medical and behavioral health realm, well, I dare say the community has said twice overwhelmingly that that's the justice system that they want. They want us to focus on violent victim crime and successfully, and they want us to be smarter and wiser and get better results when it comes to substance use disorder and mental illness. And I appreciate that support from the community, and I certainly think it's the wise path forward.
All right, Laura Conover, we will see you and look forward to your next visit with us. Hopefully we'll get you on the calendar for the month of October.
That would be lovely.
Where this year has gone.
Cooler weather, hopefully.
I know. Yes. All right, Jim Nensel, stick around. Want to talk about the upcoming Tucson City primary. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. We will be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, segment three. Normally in seg three, we talk with our co-media host. Today, the co-media host, my friend Jim Nensel, who spent, he spent more than 30 years with the Tucson Weekly as senior editor, then has become the political reporter for TucsonSentinel.com, thanks in part to a grant from Report America. Did I get that right? Report America, Jim? Is that correct?
Report for America.
Report for America. And I wanted to get that right because through the kindness of that Grant and the good wisdom, I believe, of the Grant. You're working at the Sentinel and doing a great job. One of the things you've got covering, of course, is the city election. Who's likely to move on out of this? Could you give our viewers, listeners, a quick overview of what's at stake here?
Got three wards. Voting is underway in Midtown Ward 6, Northside Ward 3, and Southside Ward 5. Ward 3, you have Kevin Dahl, who's already on the city council. He's running for re-election against Sadie Shaw, who is a member of the TUSD school board and who says that the city is on the wrong track and disagrees with Kevin Dahl on a number of issues. We've written about those in the Sentinel. If folks want to take a look at that, we're going to have more rolling out over the weekend and early next week on different areas where the candidates disagree. But Kevin has raised a lot more money than Sadie has in her upstart campaign here. And, you know, it's very rare for an elected member of the Tucson City Council to get voted out of office. But it's not like it can't happen. So that's an interesting one to watch for sure. Over in Ward 6, you have Karen Ulick, who's not running for re-election. She was appointed to the seat to replace Steve Kosachik when he resigned to go work for the county. And the candidates there are Miranda Schubert, who ran against Steve in 2021, and really has pretty much continued campaigning and working as a community organizer, building together her campaign and has a lot of endorsements. You have Leighton Rockefeller, an attorney who's making his first run for office, who's saying he's more in the mold of Steve Kosachik. He's going to be questioning what the city administration is proposing and what the fellow council members are proposing. And you have a third candidate named Jim Sinix, who's really his focus is on feeling as though the campaign system in Tucson, the election system in Tucson, is fundamentally flawed with the ward-only elections in the primary moving to allowing all city voters to vote in all wards in the general election. He feels like you should have just elections within your wards, and also wants to move to ranked choice voting and some other things that he has posted on his website about reform. And that's really his first and foremost issue. And then over in Ward 5, Richard Fimbres also stepped down from the council. You've got an appointed council member over there, Rocky Perez, who's not seeking the seat. And again, three candidates in that race, Selena Barajas, who's got the support of Mayor Romero and the majority of the council. Jesse Lugo, longtime local businessman who you are familiar with, Bill, mm-hmm. who used to run a gas station here in town, has worked as a fuel consultant to independent gas stations and been very involved in the civic end on the business side throughout his career. And then finally, another newcomer, Chris Elsner, who hasn't run for office before, has been involved in the Peace Corps. And he is the rounding out the field there in Ward 5, the Southside Ward.
So what about the Republicans?
The Republicans fielded two candidates this year, one in Ward 6, Jay Tolkoff, who does not have a primary race, and then Janet Jay is a local contractor. He's owned a sub shop in town. He used to work for Domino's Pizza. He was a big he helped establish that brand here in southern Arizona. And over in Ward 3, Janet Wittenbrocker, who has run for mayor 2 years ago and then for Board of Supervisors 1 year ago, and just decided not to take a cycle off and got into this race against whoever comes out of that primary between Sadie Shaw and Kevin Dahl.
All right, moving on to the other very important story, Project Blue. You've been around a long time, as have I. Some of your quick thoughts about Now that it looks like the folks who are opposed to Project Blue are very mobilized, you saw that at the public hearing. What's your kind of gut feeling on this?
Well, I'll tell you, it certainly seems as though a lot of people are opposed to this project. I think there's a bad feeling about the degree of secrecy that's involved and who's going to be using this, although it does appear as though the county slipped up and allowed the name of Amazon Web Services to get loose to the luminaria. I think people are very concerned about the amount of water it's going to use. Developers say they'll be using reclaimed water and they'll be recycling it through the system. So it would not be using our drinking water, but it does take time to set that up, and folks are worried that they may not move forward with that quickly enough to get it into gear. And of course, the energy question and how much energy one of these things, these data centers uses, has a lot of people concerned. So although the data center folks say they're going to be installing solar energy and things of that nature. So I think at this point, I'd say they're definitely under the gun to persuade members of the Tucson City Council to move forward with an annexation of this property, which is necessary, even though they've already got the zoning and purchased the property, thanks to a vote by the Pima County Board of Supervisors. They need to get annexed into the city in order to have Tucson Water provide the water, whether it's reclaimed water or potable water, for this project. And so folks are very, I think the council is definitely hearing a lot of folks who are opposed to this for a host of reasons.
Yeah, and officially only one council member, and he made that announcement on our show here, was Kevin Dahl, who is the firm no. The rest have said they're listening to all the input. But anyway, Jim, we'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Any final thoughts quickly?
Yeah, the folks behind this thing are saying, there's a great potential for economic development, for jobs, and they're going to put in a lot of infrastructure out there by the fairgrounds that would allow for future development. But I'm not sure that argument's going to win the day.
All right, we shall see. Thank you very much, Jim Ninsel. We'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. And again, how is your work supported? A quick plug for yourself.
Oh, of course. So beyond the Report for America grant that helps support my work, it's folks out there in the community, folks like you who write checks and support us by joining our Watchdog Club. And we are immensely grateful for all the support we receive from the community. Dylan Smith has built an amazing operation here with the help of his wife, Maria, and a whole bunch of other folks over the years. And we're certainly happy to be providing an alternative at a time when our traditional media seems to be struggling through some hard times.
For sure. Thanks, Jim. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you bet, Bill. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Jim Ninsel, TucsonSentinel.com. Leslie Lois is waiting in the wings from our partners over at 101.7 The Drive. We've got Weekend Watch right after this quick break.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
It is time for a weekend watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's 86 degrees over in Silver City. I think that's pretty darn good. This time of year, start planning your getaway to Silver City. Their elevation's 5 to 7,000 feet, depending on where you are in the vicinity, and that means it's going to be cooler. So it's an easy 3-hour drive east of Tucson. You'll have a ton of outdoor activities. There's a lot of good eating as well in downtown historic Silver City. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Our friend Leslie Lois is here from 101.7 The Drive. Okay, we're closing out July here. What's going on, Leslie, this weekend?
Well, first of all, tonight it's $5 Fridays at the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Beautiful there. So you can
it
go
is. It's a great venue.
Oh, yeah. This is going on every Friday through September 26th. Mm. But the weather's not going to be too hot this
not
weekend.
Really.
Yeah, so enjoy that, going through that. Or maybe you want to do some fun shopping. The Monsoon Market at the Chu starts at 4 o'clock today, is going on tomorrow at Tohono Chul. So you can support local growers and browse handmade goods. There's going to be desert plants, nature talks, plant discovery stations. You could do that 4 to 9 today, and then tomorrow morning 7 to noon, and it is free to attend. Mm-hmm. And speaking of sales, how about a Tiny Treasures annual sale? This is happening at the Mini Time Machine Museum.
Oh, I wondered if it was over at the Tiny Museum. Well, it's not a tiny museum, but
no.
It's a museum. The museum itself, the physical plant is good size, but what it houses are things tiny.
I know. So you'll be able to find tiny dollhouses, toy furniture, dolls, miniature accessories. I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's really kind of neat.
Yeah.
Also, tomorrow night is the last time for the night ops at the Pima Air and Space Museum. I did go to one of them, and we had a blast with our granddaughter there. That's from 5 to 8:30 tomorrow, and it's going to be photography and art night is going to be the theme there. And it is really fun. It's $15 for ages 13 and up. And not only can you see the planes, but they have all these fun activities you can do and watch the sunset.
Oh yeah.
Great, love it.
Great spot to sort of cool off as we transition in. The nights are getting, the feel is like autumn.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you kind of noticed that?
Yeah.
The mornings?
I
mean, this morning and yesterday morning, it was just like, wow.
I know.
There's a change happening.
So
here.
Nice.
I know.
If you are a fan of Queen, One Night of Queen is performing tomorrow night at the Fox Theater. We gave some tickets away on the drive. That's happening 7:30 tomorrow with that show. And, this is pretty cool. The Goonies going to be on the big screen on Sunday at the Fox Theater. That's happening 2 o'clock on Sunday, and it's $12 for that to get to see the Goonies on the big screen.
Very good. Leslie Lois, have a great weekend. We'll listen for your work on 101.7 The Drive. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Have a great weekend, everybody.